Welcome to Zen Mind, a podcast featuring talks from Zenki Dilo Roshi, the guiding teacher at the Boulder Zen Center in Boulder, Colorado. We are excited to announce the self-paced course on Dogen's Genjo Koan is live. There you can find all the rest of the Dharma talks in this series. The course helps make Dogen's text more accessible and bring his teachings into our everyday lives. I've put a link in the show notes where you can learn more about it. If you would like to dive deeper into all the topics discussed by Zenki Roshi in this podcast, consider becoming a premium subscriber. This will give you access to recorded Q&A sessions related to each talk, as well as previously unreleased talks from our intensives. Becoming a premium subscriber helps to support the continuation of the podcast and Zenki Roshi's teachings. Learn more about it by clicking the link in the show notes. Now here's Zenki Roshi.
Good morning. Today we're ending the everyday Zen practice period, which has been going on for 3 months. You, those of you who participated, you know, about 45 of us or so, you've had clarified intentions for your practice. You've made some commitments based on what seemed right for you and what fits into your life. And obviously, you don't want to, now that this is over, drop your intentions like a sack of potatoes. You know, it's like, okay, I've carried this for 3 months. I'm glad it's over. Well, maybe you are. I don't know. That'd be fine. But it's obvious, you know, the secret of practice is continuous practice. And it is something that is particularly emphasized by Dogen, that we don't arrive. Even if we experience enlightenment in some big way, it's not over, because our practice requires us to meet each moment with uprightness and the ability to respond. So if you feel like, well, I'm done, then this is already a form of checking out from the present. Like, well, I'm done. I don't have to pay attention to this. Now, the nature of the present is that it's unique. The nature of the present is that it's not ever the same. So we can't bring a general understanding to a moment. We need to bring ourselves to the moment with, as we say in our tradition, you know, with not knowing, with an openness that allows us to be in tune with the particularity of the situation, so that our response can be particular and appropriate. All right, so as usual, you know, after retreat or a time of intensified or invigorated or renewed practice, or you want to call that what this was, 3 months, there naturally arises the question of how to establish and uphold practice in your everyday circumstances. This is probably the most common and pervasive question from practitioners, you know, and it's understandable. It's like, so I thought maybe it would be helpful. Some of us just finished Sesshin, or not long ago, 7 days of what should I call this? Pretty formalized practice. Maybe formal practice for 7 days. Schedule, ways to do things, etc. Formal. There's form. You are expected to follow that form. And maybe it's useful to think about, in a way, the principles of formal practice to see how those principles can continue in informal situations. See what I'm saying? Obvious, but our lives feel informal, not formalized. They are all over the place. You know, however you experience them, busy, messy, complex, weird. Weird is a technical term. So how do the principles of practice continue under these circumstances that are different from formal practice? So let's look at formal practice first. So there's zazen. Like I'm thinking, you know, sesshin, how does the morning begin? Well, you wake up. Here's the first challenge. The bell rings, you just get up. Oh, yeah. There's already maybe a pattern that you could break just to get up. But so, then there's zazen. There's kinin, walking meditation, slow and fast. Then there is oryoki practice, breakfast, you know. Many of you have practiced oryoki in one of the sort of I don't have much expectation with this practice period. It's an invitation for you to discover the elements of practice and put them together in your life according to your circumstances. This was the idea, right? And we can refine this, and I'm really interested in your feedback. Like, what worked, what didn't work? If we do this every year, we can refine it, not just because the practice council and I have certain ideas, but because we find out together what works and what doesn't work, what's helpful, what isn't helpful. I like to think that Buddhism is a form of pragmatism. Pragmatism is do more of what works and do less of what doesn't work. So we have to find out what works. And it's an experiment to find out what works. You don't just know, you find out. And things change over time too. You get older, certain things don't work anymore. You get young, oh no, that doesn't happen. The arrow of time goes one way. So there's oryoki. Not every one of you has experienced it, but many of you have. And so you understand, if you've done it, you know it's formalized practice. So I'll say a few things about that. And then we could say work. You know, breakfast, and we sit some more zazen, and then there's work. So work I understood also as formal practice. So let me go through these things and just tease out some principles. The main kind of instruction of zazen is not to move. We sit and we limit our practice to we take away all the movement and just sit still. So when we sit still, the stillness of the body invites the mind into stillness, and when the mind becomes more still, it invites the body into practice, into stillness. And in this, and this is a reinforcing cycle between body and mind. And it's easier to start with the body. So much of Zen practice is accessing the mind through the body. So if you can find ways to leave the body in stillness, then the mind is invited into stillness. Now, your physical posture is you maintain An intention to sit upright. It's like we have an ideal of uprightness in our mind. That's our intention, you know, to sit upright. And then we have our actual posture. So if I exaggerate, you know, our actual posture is like this, and our ideal posture is like that. And there's always a dialogue between your actual posture and your ideal posture. It's just, now this is an exaggeration, but something's going on, you know. The heart is collapsed, the hip joint is blocked, whatever your particular body is like, you know, it's not ideal. But it's in dialogue with an ideal posture, and this dialogue continually invites your actual posture into uprightness. Now, I'm calling it uprightness, but it's like, if you think of the spine, you invite the spine to be stacked just so that the muscles of your body can melt around the nicely stacked spine. So you don't make relaxation happen, but you're inviting relaxation to occur as you are intending this or inviting your spine into uprightness. This isn't a perfect process, but it's a process, and it can be very fruitful. It takes repetition too, etc. There's a kind of effortlessness that emerges over time, because when the body finds more uprightness, it feels less effortful to sit, just sit. Okay, then the mental posture is that, as I call it, you know, you allow your experience to be exactly what it is, meaning no interference. You just notice without thinking about it. You notice your sensations. Notice your posture. You notice thoughts that come, and you also notice thoughts going. You find out that thoughts are coming and going. If you engage your thoughts, if you get involved with the content, they stay longer. If you don't get involved with the content, they just disappear in no time. Will you ever stop your thinking completely? No, but something happens in Zazen, and it's like a foreground-background reversal. And this is important because Zazen allows for that shift. And the clarification of what it means is you begin to see a distinction between the contents of your mind, the sensations, the thoughts, the sounds, the sights, and the space in which those contents come and go, which is what I call the field of mind. You just step back. It's what Dogen calls taking the backward step. You just step back from the contents, and you can reflect on what, where is this all happening? And the answer is, it's happening in your mind. It's happening in your field of awareness. So this isn't difficult to think, but it is not obvious as an experiential fact. When Zazen allows you to recognize this as an experiential fact, that there is the field of mind and the contents of mind, something miraculous happens. In some ways, it's not a big deal. Once you see it clearly, it's sort of like, huh, this is not a big deal. You realize that you are not your thoughts. You are not your sensations. You are not the contents of your mind. So it actually begins to be an answer to the question, this thorny question, who are you? Well, you know what you're not. You're not any of the contents. then what are you? Well, maybe the field, maybe the space in which this all occurs. So this is this field of mind. What I'm pointing to by saying the words field of mind has certain qualities. It is still. So, like, by practicing stillness, you're already inviting that shift to occur, like to have the stillness of the field of mind come to the foreground. You notice it. You bring it to the foreground, and it's like, oh. You notice how something feels stopped, settled, rested. So let's say that's Zazen, and it's very much tied to first bodily stillness, which invites an inner stillness, which is really what it is about. You want to discover that inner stillness. Okay, and then and then the period is over, you know, the one rings the bell, bing. Then you get up. And I said this in Sesshin, and I want to repeat it for all of you. Your job in getting up is to maintain a sense of stillness. This is the most important thing. If you have trouble sitting for 40 minutes, you know, you want to just jump up. Ah, it's over. This is like the practice period after 3 months. You know, it's over. I can, you know, take a break. Don't have to be so hard on myself with all these intentions and commitments. You know, none of you is feeling this, I'm sure. But, you know, let's say you did. No. Like, one of the my teachers basically said, when the bell rings, take a few moments of and continue not moving. Don't just get up. Feel how you could sit here forever. And then take that feeling into movement. This is post, I mean, when you read a Tibetan Buddhist manual or something, then they would talk about post-meditation practice. Post-meditation practice, here in our simplified way, is maintain the stillness of Zazen within your movement. So that's why we walk Kinhin slowly. And you can... And the practice of slow Kinhin is very much coordinated with your breath. So you stay tuned to your breath and you coordinate your steps, your slow, small steps with the breath. And that allows the stillness of Zazen to continue in slow walking. And then the group speeds up and we walk faster. Now, that's an increased challenge. When you walk faster, it's harder to maintain a sense of stillness. And my experience is this feeling of stillness, of a field that is still in the midst of activity, kind of moves to the background. This is important. Because for your everyday life, that's exactly what you need. You need a sense of background stillness because it can't be the foreground stillness of Zazen. For sure, it can't be that. If you have to, like, I don't know, teach a class of students or, you know, coach baseball or, you know, be in a meeting, take notes or, you know, write something on your computer, or program something. That's what's in the foreground. So stillness, realistically, can only be in the background. Maybe there can be moments in which it can come into the foreground again. And maybe as a very experienced practitioner, you can start to observe how foreground and background kind of merge. They become indistinguishable. Everything you do is kind of surrounded by a stillness. But it breaks down for most of us, and then we have to return. It's just... So anyway, what I'm saying right now, all I'm saying is, fast keening is like you kept stillness in the foreground in the midst of activity, but now you're kind of also exploring movement with stillness in the background. And then we go and eat orioki, you know, this wonderful and for some of us slightly annoying, you know, complicated way to eat. Now all kinds of other elements come in. Now you have a process, and the process is broken down into gestures, and each gesture is prescribed, and each gesture is a movement, and each gesture allows you to enter attention. Each gesture, each particle of the orioki process is a receptacle for attention. And you can ideally, you know, be present in that moment, in that gesture, and do it right. Now, right, I don't know. I say it in sort of quotation marks, right? It's not like there is a police that tells you what's right and wrong, Buddhist police. It's more like this gesture fully filled with attention and in accord with, you know, what the process is requiring you to do. There's some prescription, but then there is your particular embodiment of it, your way of pacing it, your way of handling things in your particular hands. Then there's the complexity of doing this with others. So your pace has to be paced with the pace of others. So it becomes a, you know, there's a group of four at an orioki table, and we can study how we are inter-affected by each other. What one person does affects what I feel. What I feel, I can know, affects the other person. So we're in a space together, and we're calibrating our movement and our pace to each other and finding an appropriateness together. This is more complex than, you know, just walking by yourself or something. And we respect and acknowledge each other by all enacted through giving and receiving in orioki, you know, and the care that we have for the objects that are cleaned at the table, carefully cleaned. Okay, I don't want to overanalyze this, but okay, and then there's work, and work is basically the closest that we come to our everyday activity, and yet we, in sesshin or in formal practice, we practice functional talking. Let's just take this as an example. What is functional talking? In my view, to be strictly silent is kind of foolish, you know, because when you work with others and you have reason to communicate, but you communicate what is functional to your task. And it's just important to notice the difference. It's like what you really need to say for doing something. Because in formal work practice, we just do the task that's in front of us with 100% of our attention. That's the intention. Yeah? You just do that. You were asked to chop the broccoli, cut the broccoli. You just cut the broccoli. Ideally, you don't complain and say, like, I would have liked to be outside. You know, why am I stuck in the kitchen? This is extra. And this is very helpful because in some situations you have a choice about what you want to do and what you can do and so forth. But in some situations you just have to do something, and then to have no complaint about it and just apply yourself to what you need to do is extremely liberating. Now, functional talking means, yeah, you do talk, you activate your mind for what is necessary, but when you don't have to think about it or communicate with someone, you don't distract yourself with some chit-chat and say, like, cut the broccoli while talking about what happened yesterday or what you want to do tomorrow, the trip you are planning and so forth. This is, you know, this is the normal for our everyday life. But in practice, we take that away, in formal practice, we take that away so that we can just be present in the task that is in front of us. Okay? So that's formal practice, let's say. Those elements. There's others, but, you know, that's enough. What's the principle here? There's a reduction of complexity, let's call it. We're just sitting, and then we're just walking very slowly, and then we're just walking a little bit faster, but still, it's just walking, and then we're just eating, and we're just doing, because this eating ritual is broken down into this complexity of individual gesture. We're just doing this gesture. We're just picking up the bowl and holding it out to receive food. And then we're just taking it back and putting it down. And then we're lifting up the chopsticks and putting them on the bowl. Just that. You just do that. There's nothing more to it, really. And when you work, you're just doing that task. You're just doing that. And you limit yourself. So this is a reduction of complexity, right? But you can also see how it's building up. Zazen is like, really, not much. And then you reintroduce gradually, you reintroduce some complexity, always with the idea that you're holding stillness present. First it was you were inviting it into the foreground, but then you were holding it in the background of your eating, your working. So let me make a side note here about complexity and simplicity. This is maybe a little philosophical, but I think it's really, really important. I think there's a theme in our culture which basically says everything's getting more complicated. One theme is everything is getting faster, and another theme is everything is getting more complicated. When you have those two things together, it's getting faster and more complicated. Everyone feels like, no, it's overwhelming. Give me a break. It's fast and complicated. I don't want that. Something like that. Maybe you like it fast and complicated. That's great. Then you're living in the right moment of time. Fast and complicated is fun for a while until you burn out. Then it's like, you recover from all the fun. Now, I believe that life, for every being, has always and will always be complex. Complex means many, many aspects woven together in undivided activity. You can't tease it all out. Everything is more complex than what you can think about. You just think about your body. I mean, it's so complex. We have no idea how things work. We have a little bit of an idea of how things work. Enough that we get all arrogant about it. It's like, oh, we know how this works. Yeah, sort of. We sort of know how this works. And there's many things we don't know, you know. If you're a medical practitioner, you know a little bit. And then there's like a huge mystery. This is complexity. This is what I call complexity. Now, when you have the demand in your mind that you must understand complexity, things get complicated. I make a distinction between complexity and complication. Because when you tease out a lot of aspects from your complexity, you make them explicit. You unfold them. The complexity means it's all folded together into one undivided multiplicity of factors and aspects. And when you take certain things out, you explicate them, then you have all these aspects and you name them and then you want to find causal relationships between all these aspects, and then it gets immensely complicated. Because those causal relationships, what we call interdependence, are so many. So it gets very complicated, because how do you get from here to there? And if you want to make, you know, want to bring it under technological control, it's really complicated. Lots of things can go wrong, and then you have anxiety that it can go wrong. So complexity, it's all folded together. Leave it alone. It's just complex. Complicated is when we are starting to tease things out and want to understand stuff, it gets complicated. Simple is when you just deal with one aspect. That's simplifying it. Just one aspect. It seems to me that Buddhist practice is to kind of set complication aside, but not ignore complexity, if I'm making any sense. So Dogen, and we've practiced and studied with Dogen's Genjo Koan now for 3 months, and let me just touch on the title again, Genjo Koan. Genjo meaning to complete that which appears. Okay? This is the practice. So the answer, how do you bring practice into your daily life, is to adopt the practice of completing that which appears. This is simplification. What appears? What appears right now? Well, I'm talking, you're listening, we're sitting here, someone's coming in the door. This is what's happening. This is what's appearing. So when we say, you know, be present, you are present with what appears. And this is something that can happen at any time. Not just in formal practice. At any time, you can be present with what appears. And your intention is to complete it. Well, I've spoken about this. If you have discovered the stillness of the field of mind, appearance appears within that space. Tell me at any moment in your time, in your life, when is something not complete? Like right now, what's missing? This moment, it's so simple, right? It's just this moment. It's just this. What's hard about that? Nothing. it also is complex. It implies the entirety of evolution. How we got here implies the entire complex history of evolution. It's just amazing and very simple at the same time. It's just what is. This is what's happening. It also implies the entire possibility space of the future. If you started to think about all that, it gets very complicated. But you don't have to. Sometimes you might want to, but you don't have to. You can just be present. This is what appears. And it is already complete against the background of your still mind. So how do you practice this? Like, you're stressed, right? I have to get somewhere. This happened to me yesterday. I had this idea that I had to get somewhere. Well, it was sort of objectively true because I had an appointment at 4:15 and I was late. So I drive out there, get to Canyon Boulevard. This is a traffic jam. What a horrible situation. I am late and there's a traffic jam. This is like insulting. How all these cars are in my way. So I'm there at the intersection of 22 and Canyon. And I completely dropped into zazen, relaxed, stopped everything, stopped my mind. It's like, what am I going to do? This is complete. With a traffic jam. It's just what it is. And the other thing that's complete is, I'm going to be late. Better face it. This is, you know, what's happening. I can apologize. Do better next time. Like, end earlier, begin, you know, that kind of thing. You just watch yourself. Complete, it's all complete. It's all workable. It's not a problem. Now, this is a simple, overly simple example, but isn't this true for everything? You have an idea of what should happen. And reality falls short, and there's this stress. So what is the prescription of completing that which appears? It's like, stop. Get with what is the case right now, with what appears, and discover it as complete. So we don't have to be perfect, but your intention is that you hold this possibility and that you now and then really find this stopping, and then just do it. Savor what happens when you do it. When you get that feeling, it's sort of like it gets interesting because like stress falls away. You're like, wow, this works. Great. You'll do it more often. Don't have to be perfect. Just commit it. Now, the other thing is, things are always also incomplete. Why? I've said this now many times over the last 3 months. Because you are forced to participate. You can't stand back and say reality is complete. Nothing. This has nothing to do with me. No, you are in it. And because space moves, that is time. Right? Space is not still. It moves. That is time. You're forced to participate. If you think you don't participate, that's your way of participating. So some next step is always necessary. And you can see if you can find a way to make that next step feel to be something that completes this moment. This is the appropriateness thing, you know? Have an appropriate response. Notice how this is a reduction of complication. I now want to change from reduction of complexity to a reduction of complication. You live your life by returning to what appears and by reducing your task to what is the next appropriate step. You may say, well, but I have to plan certain things. Yeah, go ahead, plan away. Nothing changes. If you have a plan, you know the plan isn't going to be implemented 100% because each step changes the situation. You take a step, well, you're already in a slightly different situation. Then you need to find the next step from there. If you have a general plan and guidance from what you think where you want to go, fine. Don't forget that you may have to go somewhere completely different than you planned, because that happens often. And if you don't allow for that possibility for the plan to change as you're taking the steps, you'll be continually frustrated, because you will live the discrepancy between what you planned and what actually is possible. It's just the way it is. So our life is very simple. It is now what appears, and completing it with the next step. So if you get stressed or you don't know what to do, come back to that. And it's interesting, the complications of your life are not gone, but they are just implied in that simplicity of this moment as complexity. They'll be there, but you refrain from the demand that you need to be in control. Dogen says in the Genjo Koan, now when this bird or this fish, I remember the bird and the fish, that's you. Now if this fish or bird only swims or flies after investigating the entire ocean or the entire sky, this bird has neither a place nor a path. You know, it's what I'm talking about, said much more poetically. If you think you have to investigate and figure out and understand everything about your life before you act, before you take that step, you have no place. You feel ungrounded. In other words, you don't have your feet on the ground. You don't know who you are. You're lost. And there's no path, because the path unfolds one step at a time. And the koan, this simultaneity of universal and unique, of field and particular, we've talked about this. This is kind of hard to talk about. This is about trust. You've got to learn, I think, to trust. And I'm talking about this in the context of how do you practice in your everyday life. You've got to trust that you, in your smallness, in your particularity, in the way you are right now, with your illness, with your overwhelm, with your, you know, whatever it is that bugs you the most, that you are an expression of the entire field. If you want to express this in psychological terms, it would be something like, I accept myself just as I am in this very moment. If you wanted to say it in dharmic terms, it would be, because I'm an expression of the entire field, the totality of existence. Because remember, at this very moment, you can't be different. You're just like this. What next step you take, yes, there's participation, there's practice, right there. There's practice. What are you going to continue from here? Are you going to continue with stress, or you continue with background stillness? This is where it turns. Each moment is a gate of transformation. We just need to be there. You already understand what it is about. Thank you very much.